The thing I'd like to say is that, well, I just ran into a friend who's also an activist on the street, and we were both speculating about what form this event would take, the dedication and the rally in the park, and we were hoping that it wouldn't take the form of a celebration, because it's definitely not something to celebrate. But we were a little worried because it seems like it's going to be a day in the park, you know, getting a tan, buying some soda, and listening to music. And that is my, how shall I put it, my sneaking suspicion about how the Resource Center does things.
You're talking about the famed Resource Center for Inaction, Nonviolence?
The Resource Center for getting other people to do their violence for them. And I know there's a lot of great people working on it. Some of them are my friends who I've worked closely with before. But I'm hoping that they can use this great opportunity to push for action against things like nuclear weapons. And if you're going to talk about nuclear weapons, you have to talk about spending priorities. And you have to talk about how money is allocated for certain things, like weapons production. Up in Livermore, they're currently working on, get this, making sure that their conventional weapons still function so they can fight a war after they've dropped the nuclear weapons. It's very important to keep killing after you've killed, and making sure that their soldiers are the only ones alive. This ties into the collateral damage statue. They're talking about getting rid of civilians in order to make sure they can just keep fighting. They spend a lot of money on that. Now, there's some other things that the money could be spent on. And I'm sure Robert has talked about those a lot on this show. But I'm wondering, I'm hoping, but I'm not all that confident that Scott Kennedy et al. Are going to use this opportunity to point that out. And not only to point it out, not just to mention it so we can all feel good about ourselves while we're getting suntans, but to actually encourage people to take action, direct action, nonviolent action against these injustices. But how much confidence I have in Scott Kennedy pointing out his own hypocrisy, well, I just don't have all that much.
Right, well, my concern about Scott was, Rotkin and Yokoyama, and other members of the city council, the five who voted to give away the property to the Bittersweet Cafe, the Scope Park, Scribner Park area, my concern was that I was actually thinking of putting out a flyer and encouraging people to engage in a protest action in the middle of the collateral damage business, because they're holding it at the town clock right across from the area that is soon to be declared a private preserve for people with money. We have an incoming phone call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert, this is John. I would like to change the perspective on that statue from the, as it were, or add to the significance of the statue in that there's significant collateral damage in the class war that's going on in the United States.
Good point.
In the homeless people, and if we could get a flyer out to that effect, I would really appreciate it.
I think that's
really a significance that should not be lost on people, that although we've blown away millions of civilians in foreign nations, a class war in this nation, there's significant collateral damage in every venue, everywhere you look. Anyway, thanks.
Great idea.
Bye.
Thank you. So now all we need is a volunteer who will make such a flyer. Perhaps Eric, taking time off from doing some nonviolence training and preparing for his journey north to Livermore, would be interested in such a thing.
I'm definitely interested, but I'm also overcommitted, so I have to beg out of this one.
I see. Well, now, perhaps we should give Scott Kennedy a call and invite him to respond on the air to these allegations, or alligators, as the case may be. I've actually tried to reach Scott Kennedy by phone and left messages for him, but remarkably, he has not returned my calls. It is shocking. I think this idea that John Stewart had of a collateral damage against the homeless perspective on this is really brings the issue home. It really does bring the issue home. And it shows that we're not simply, I mean, I'm not simply concerned with Scott Kennedy's political career, pro and con. I'm concerned with the issues of public space for people that is being taken away at the very town clock where this celebration is happening. Against the vote of Scott Kennedy, to his credit, the city council in 1991 set up a curfew at the town clock. And so it's illegal to be there after 1 o'clock at night in any protest, even if you've got a table and you're a grandmother against Palestinian violence or Israeli violence. You know, that's illegal to be there because of the town's concern that homeless people were using the town clock as a center for protest against the city's sleeping ban. But while I have Eric in the studio here, you want to give us any way to link this? What do you think of this idea of a collateral damage for the homeless locally? And what issues do you think that kind of a flyer or argument should focus on? What has been the collateral damage against the homeless? We're not really talking about expenditures of money for war, because the city government does not specifically expend money for war, but they, of course, expend money for the police force.
Yeah, I like John's term of the class war, because I think that's a lot of what's happening downtown, well, and also nationally. You know, I mentioned earlier the spending priorities, and you know, billions of dollars are definitely being spent on these weapons instead of being spent on, say, services for the homeless. But it's also not just a question of deciding what's a better way to spend your money. It's more of a systemic thing, which is why I'm a radical. The money that's being spent is being spent as it is because it serves certain powerful interests. They're not just sort of not realizing that people don't have a place to sleep, and they're not just sort of forgetting that war kills people. They're doing it deliberately. And I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but conspiracy means breathing with, like having the same kind of thought. And so it's really not all that a crazy idea. It is a conspiracy.
Oh, all the nets.
And the people, it's a capitalist society, and the people who own the means of production, who own the factories, and own us for a certain number of hours every day, because we can only sell our labor power, that's about all we have, they sell their items, they sell their services, they sell their goods, and they make a profit off of it. They charge more than it costs to produce. And of course, we're the ones producing it, but we don't get any of that profit. Rather, we have to pay for the owner's profit as consumers. Every time we buy something, we're giving more money to the people who are already rich. And the already rich use this money to reinforce their power and their position in society. They keep making ever greater profits, and they invest in things like, bombs, because bombs are very profitable. We love to pay lots of money for them. They also invest in things like police forces and little happy shopper helpers downtown. And I guess that's what they do. I haven't really figured it out. But these shopper helpers, they also have it. They're a double-edged sword. They also make sure that there's no one to wipe the smile off the shopper helper's face, or the shopper's face, the tourist's face. And those people who might cause someone not to smile are often the homeless, the poor, you know, the whole list. You know who they are. And the reason that us undesirables might cause people not to smile are partly because we remind them of where they could be, perhaps where they're going. And if the trends towards capitalist accumulation, meaning that the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, keep going, and they will because that's how the system's designed, there's going to be a lot more of us who are undesirable. And what happens when you get a society that's so unstable as to have a very few number of very rich people and a huge number of very poor people? Well, it gets a little unstable. It's kind of like an upside-down triangle balancing on its point. And in order to keep that stability, you got to prop it up. And that's what the police do. That's what the shopper helpers do. What are those people called, anyway?
Hosts,
of course. They're hosting the tourists. Awfully nice of them. And they are, it's not just the baton and the gun that keep us poor accepting our position. It's also a matter of ideology, basically just the way we think. And the way we think is heavily influenced by a lot of factors, including the media, obviously, the television, the newspapers. But it's also influenced by just what the people who have access to these media say. Scott Kennedy is definitely one of those people who has a lot of access to media, partly because he's a big community figure, partly because he's a politician. And one of these things that people say is that, we're for peace. We're for smiles. We're for everyone just getting along. And in other words, they're trying to make us more placid. They're trying to placate us. They're trying to make us accept our position. Well, I don't accept it. And a lot of people don't accept it because it's not fair, it's not just, it's not right. And there's a lot of things that we can do about this. We can take direct action to stop these injustices from happening. But that wouldn't be in the interest of the rich and powerful. So one of the things they do is they create these, it's kind of the bread and circus approach. They create these illusions of false opposition where the government dropped the bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And now all of a sudden the government is the one mourning this event? That's crazy. I mean, obviously it's not the same government. Obviously it's not the same people. But it's the same power structure. It's people operating in their interests. And that's why I'm afraid that this rally is just going to be a feel-good thing. It's going to assuage our guilt. We're going to say, oh, what a terrible thing. But we're not going to question how we're complicit in that very same thing that's happening now. That's what we need to do. That's what we need to push for. So we need to, how shall I say it without getting in trouble? We need to make sure that this event doesn't just become a whitewash. And I use that term advisedly. I mean, white people, washing away all the dirt, so to speak. We need to make sure that doesn't happen. We need to make sure that it actually pushes people, encourages people, helps people become involved in making sure that it doesn't happen again and making sure it stops from happening now. I mean, violence takes many forms, and poverty is perhaps a much bigger form of violence than war, even, or nuclear bombs. But, of course, it, like I said, takes many forms, and it's happening all over the place in many ways, from the Native Americans who are being killed mining the uranium to the Native Americans who are being killed from poverty. So I would encourage people to show up tomorrow, but I would encourage people to show up with a chip on their shoulder, to show up and speak loudly and carry a big, whatever you like to carry.
Certainly carry on. Eric here has been carrying on for years and is running around with flyers in his hand and a bicycle helmet on his head. I don't know what else. Call-in numbers here in case you want to comment to or on what Eric had to say or dialogue with us, as we like to say here in the trendy 90s, is 427-3772. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 89.3 FM. This is the expanded version of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. We're going to keep bleeding out our message here until somebody comes in to take away the mic, which may be presumably sometime before 1 o'clock when the next host, and I don't mean one of the people on the mall, comes in to lead you through the next hour. I think focus on this upcoming event on Saturday is important. There are going to be lots of people at this event. It's going to have these big-name music stars. I think this event is a perfect opportunity for people to make points that have been unheard in this town, whether those points have to do with psychiatric abuse, whether they have to do with political hypocrisy, whether they have to do with anti-homeless laws downtown, whether they concern the inappropriate priorities of the police force regarding the criminalization of hemp, marijuana, whether they have to do with oppression and police abuse in the Hispanic and black communities and poor communities here in Santa Cruz. Maybe there are other issues which Eric would like to point out that are relevant. I guess you have issues regarding development in town, issues regarding timber use, issues that the city council may not be paying a hell of a lot of attention to. They're on vacation right now, but hey, the media is going to be at this rally. The city politicians are going to be at this rally, and 5,000 to 10,000 people may well be at this rally. Who knows? Maybe even the national media may be at this rally. What do you think, Eric?
Well, I definitely think there's going to be media there. In fact, I was just over at the Resource Center for Nonviolence right before I came over here, and there were already media there. And in fact, I'm thinking about volunteering to be a media host. Yeah, it will be a great opportunity. You know, if I'm going to be showing them around and helping them find the way, I can certainly talk while I'm doing it. And that's exactly what I'm talking about right now, is showing up at the event, making sure it encourages direct action. And I'm going to have to go now, but I'm going to leave these flyers with you, Robert. And also, I wanted to announce this in Spanish. Quiero decirles que va a ser una manifestación en Livermore, que está como al este de Berkeley. Y será las 10 de la mañana, este domingo, el 6 de agosto, y es el quinto aniversario de las bombas en Nagasaki y Hiroshima. Y va a ser una rally, ¿verdad? Una manifestación y después una acción directa. Y para participar en esto hay una preparación, un taller para practicar la no violencia, y empieza a las 6:30 hasta las 9:30 este sábado, el 5 de agosto, en el Parque Loud Nelson. Y para más información acerca del taller de no violencia, se puede llamar al 454-9293. Otra vez, 454-9293. Y para más información acerca de la manifestación, le puede llamar al 510-832-4347. O una llamada gratis y local es 429-8888. Me gustaría que ustedes participen. Y la mayoría de estos eventos serán en inglés, pero yo puedo traducirles para los que no hablan inglés. Y buena suerte y sigue luchando.
Este es el jefe de las palabras, el hombre más agreeable. Venga, if you can, and I will attempt to learn Spanish.
Si se puede.
Si se puede, yes. Thank you, Eric. All right, adios. That leaves the studio empty and the phone lines open. We have our usual number, 427-3772. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides, your bi-weekly or twice-a-weekly show talking about Santa Cruz and other cities often, but mostly about poverty, mostly about civil rights, mostly about police abuse. And I guess what I should do is get to my usual script here. Or perhaps I should give you guys a break. Maybe I'll give you a break with... it'd be nice to give you a little music. Maybe I could find that tape that fashionable Phil Free... Now, that's not a very good nickname for him. Anyway, we'll find the right nickname. Maybe we can find the tape he was talking about earlier. Hang on. Someone has hidden the Just Kidding tape. So what we'll do instead is play a creaky old tape from Wobbly Days about the IWW, which Industrial Workers of the World, you may know, a local labor union, which historically has been partisan of direct action. Free speech fights, supporting the Constitution, opposing the bosses. Let's listen to a little warbling from the IWW.
From all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell. Which side are you on? Which side are you on? My daddy was a miner, he's now in the air and sun. Stick with him, brother miners, until this battle's won. Which side are you on? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County, there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Don't scab for the bosses, don't listen to their lies. Us poor folks haven't got a chance unless we organize. Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Oh, workers, can you stand it? Oh, tell me if you can. Will you be a lousy scab or will you be a man? Which side are you on? Which side are you on? The bosses have divided us, lied to us all along. The only way to beat them is one big union strong. Which side are you on? Which side are you on? So shoulder to shoulder, in union we shall stand. We'll beat the scabs and bosses, so come and lend a hand. Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
And that was Rebel Voices from the IWW. And it could be any one of these guys. Boy, there's a whole list of them. Utah Phillips, Fred Holstein, Bob Bovey, Jeff Cahill, who knows. Anyways, one of those guys was singing Which Side Are You On? And that's a question all of us have to answer every day, even if we aren't always asking ourselves that question. We do answer it by what we do and what we don't do. So, you should know, you can give us a call, 427-3772, and until you do, I'm going to start going through sort of some updates for regular listeners of the show. I've been following the curfew debate. You may remember the curfew, the countywide curfew coming down the pike, 11 to 5, for anyone under 18. It should sweep through the Board of Supervisors in 3 weeks. They have to do 3 readings of the law, and then it will be law. Santa Cruz City won't be affected until the Santa Cruz City Council takes up the curfew, and that's going to be a real ball of wax, a bag of worms, who knows what. But county is a big area, and everything not a part of Capitola, Scotts Valley, Watsonville, and Santa Cruz will be affected by this countywide curfew. I talked to the head of the Criminal Justice Council a couple days ago, a woman named, actually not the head, she's the executive director. She was assigned to write the curfew law. She did. She wrote it. Her name is Betty Ipich. She thinks that may show up on the city Board of Supervisors agenda on August 15th. For your information, in case you don't know, Supes meet every Tuesday, every week. They took a vacation in July, but they are back. City Council, on the other hand, in Santa Cruz, which covers the city, will be gone for the month of August. So the sheriff is supposed to be doing a report. She says maybe we'll have more time than a mere 3 weeks once this thing hits the supervisors to organize against it, because the sheriff will have to do a report. But I'm not sure what they're going to do. The best strategy for them is to hustle this thing through before the students come back, because there are plenty of students under 18 who do not want a curfew. The curfew law, we have been assured, is not going to have any punitive sanctions. Spoke to Karen Gillette, who's the head of the Day Resource Center out at the homeless complex, and she tells me that she spoke to Sheriff Mark Tracy, and that they're planning a particular procedure. The first time a miner is stopped, they will explain the curfew and warn them that they'll have to surrender their rights, follow the law. The second time, they will be given a citation in the sense that they will be told to report to a sheriff the next day for, I don't know whether it's counseling or a spanking, some kind of informational session where they will be essentially told the law again. There'll be so-called satellite offices, apparently, where youths will be told to go with their parents. Or if you can't bring in your parents, if you're homeless, or if, you, let's say, your father's too busy trying to get into your pants or beating you up, you can bring in somebody from the Homeless Resource Center, like Paul Merceau, who's the head of the Homeless Resource Center. So that, according to Karen Gillette, is what Sheriff Tracy sees as the possible enforcement mechanism. Instead of dumping kids in juvenile hall or jail or simply writing them tickets and sending them to court, they will be told to report to these sort of, I don't know, big babysitting advisory stations, to told that they're not supposed to be out after 11 o'clock at night. Well, I suppose it's better than being dumped in juvenile hall or going to jail or going to court. But what is the point? How much is it going to cost? Could the resources be better used? Is this an extremely unnecessary expansion of police power, which can be used against anyone who looks young? All these questions I would answer yes. I obviously should be getting an advocate of this curfew on this show, because I'm afraid everybody listening agrees with me, and that's not very exciting. Unfortunately, the Board of Supervisors does not. They have a 4-to-1 majority. It is all set to pass this countywide curfew. The only one in opposition, as far as I know, is Supervisor Marty Wormhout, to her credit. Karen Gillette suggested that a letter-writing campaign to the Board of Supervisors might be a successful approach. I'm not coming too well prepared today, but if you have a phone book and you look under the government phone number pages, you can find the address of the Board of Supervisors. You write them a letter stating you feel that a youth curfew is not perhaps the best way to spend county money, and that perhaps the money might be better spent with youth programs. Then I think you should just sit down, write three sentences, invest in a 32-cent stamp, and send it off, because it may, I don't know if it'll change the minds, but it may change the political will, the political nervelessness or spinelessness of some of these supervisors, if they know that there are a number of people who think that this curfew sucks big time. So you might consider that. Write a letter to the Board of Supervisors. According to Karen, Mark Tracy said that the main reason for the law was rich kids creating havoc at night. Now, we have to remember that Mark was talking to Karen Gillette, who is the head of the Homeless Resource Center, which doesn't have too many rich kids, and so it's a nice thing to say to another constituency: we're not really going after you, poor homeless people. We just want those rich kids. Well, I've heard some nasty things about rich kids lately beating up poor people, and I haven't got too much to say in favor of those people. But I think everybody who's young, rich and poor, should have a right to basic civil liberties, even at night, if they're not engaging in criminal behavior. And to make merely a presence on the streets a crime, or a basis for a police stop — and a police stop is a pretty traumatic thing, at least it was for me — the first time I was stopped by the police was in San Francisco. I was, I don't know, 14 or 15. And I asked them what my rights were, and they beat me down, not physically, but they raged at me, they frightened me, they humiliated me, and I didn't kind of raise my head for another 2 years. I was essentially pistol whipped, or I felt that way. So I think it can be a very traumatic experience to have to deal with the police, to give them the power, in essence, to tell you don't have a right to walk down the street after 11 o'clock at night. I think that's a pretty hefty thing to do. Now, I'm no doubt going to be reminded that there are shootings that there are there's cases of pimps luring and addicting young women to illegal and dangerous drugs, and then turning them out as prostitutes. And this isn't just a fairy tale or a police scare story. This happens. Has happened to people I know, and it's a reality in this community. So it's not something that, you know, we can ignore in the sense that we can say it doesn't exist. What is my response? Is a curfew going to really deal with this situation? I don't know. I know that I think a curfew will be more likely to impact innocent people than guilty people. And I also know that there's a lot of hostility and scapegoating going on as the economic climate grows worse, and young people are a target for this. If you got a ring in your nose, if you got a tattoo on you, you know, if you're wearing strange clothing, if your skin's dark and you're in a gang area, hey, you know, you are fair game. You are a subject, not just a target of suspicion for the police, but you are a target of hostility for people around you, white people around you, people around you who have been kicked by the society and by the job every day are likely to kick you or to take a vicarious pleasure in the blows against you, because it's a perverted form of power when we are all so powerless and we feel so powerless to affect our lives. And with that homily, I want to encourage you to give a call and affect all of our lives by talking to us on the air. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. Phone lines are open. This is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, 89.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. And I'm going to keep talking until somebody interrupts me here. There's a flyer going out, which I was mentioning earlier in the program, talks about the happy host, talks about the mediators. It also talks about an incident that happened at Zanotto's, which you heard discussed on the air by attorney Ed Fry. Charles White is suing Zanotto's assistant manager Carrie Combe in court for damages stemming from an attack last August. Combe swore under oath he called White food stamp scum after refusing to let White pay for a milk bottle deposit with food stamps. White and a passing postal employee say that Combe, the Zanotto's guy, punched White in the face without provocation. Now, Zanotto's has long had a reputation as being nasty to poor people. I got to admit, I go there and I buy sandwiches because they got great sandwiches. They have tables you can sit at outside. They're conveniently located downtown. I try to avoid the store, but I do occasionally buy there. But we actually did a picket of Zanotto's back in 1989, 90, 91, when they were following around poor people, surveilling them, treating them abusively verbally and even physically, hassling them about food stamps. I put through a call to the Zanotto's after Ed Fry, the attorney, was on the air discussing this issue in order to give Danny Zanotto and the Zanotto's management an opportunity to respond. Thus far, they have not called me back. So if they do, I'm hoping we can put the Zanotto's side of the story on the air. Equal time being our watchword here, or at least my watchword on my show. The minute I start doing Holocaust revisionism, however, I think I may find myself in trouble. But we'll see about that. You are urged also, if you had a bad experience at Zanotto's or know someone who has had a bad experience, to give a call to attorney Ed Fry, and his phone number is 425-1315. That's 425-1315. And he can make use of what you have to say in his legal suit against Zanotto's, and the point is not simply to get some money for Charles White, the man who was reportedly abused by Zanotto's assistant manager, Carrie Combe, but to also discourage the practice of treating people like food stamp scum because they happen to use food stamps or are poor. Freedom of speech is one thing, abusive conduct and discrimination is another. So do give a call to Ed Fry at 425-1315 if you have any information about Zanotto's. Keith McHenry, or Katzenjammer Keith of San Francisco Food Not Bombs, is planning another tour. He's going to go off and run around the country again, organizing little Food Not Bombs, or actually encouraging people in their own organizational efforts in different cities. There were, at last count, over 100 Food Not Bombs across the country, some of them not doing too well, as I said, but the more the merrier. That's interesting. I talked to him, I think it was yesterday morning. He pointed out that there have been anti-cop riots in three cities over this last weekend because of incidents of police abuse. And I still have a sort of a sadness here because the gentleman, Tom, who called in and reported police abuse against his son, Santa Cruz City police abuse, didn't get back in touch with us. And I want to encourage Tom or anyone who knows about that incident in which a young man was apparently targeted as a graffiti writer and tracked down by police or chased down and thrown down on the ground, and there were police dogs involved. It happened late at night. Give a call to SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, at 475-2012. That's 475-2012. And talk about that case. We need to have these cases publicized. We need to have proper complaints filed. We need change in the police department. And unfortunately, what we're getting is the runaround. I talked to Gary Yemene, who's the staff coordinator person for the Civilian Police Review Board, which, by the way, will be meeting at 5 o'clock on a week from Monday. I believe that's August... Again, the calendar's not here, but it's a week from next Monday. It's at 5 o'clock at City Hall Chambers. And I encourage you to go to that meeting. Lighthouse Linda LeMaster, the Housing Now! Activist, and I had a bit of a go-around on this issue last show, where she was suggesting the same thing and praising certain city council members for their actions and feeling that we can't really criticize unless we can actually do something positive here. And I think it would be positive to keep your eye on this group and even to go to their meetings, although they're not doing much. The issues around civilian police review fundamentally, for those who don't know already, that the police review board here has no power, that it cannot even get an independent investigation going without the city council's taking separate action, that they have not even held one public hearing on a complaint, that complaints first have to go through the internal police affairs cover-up scene process before they even reach the police review board. And at the current moment, the police department is refusing to forward copies of the complaints. They're just sending little descriptions of what the complaints are with the officer's name blacked out. I mean, it's a completely farcical situation. And the only two complaints that the board has looked at have been essentially... they've dismissed them with I think one was found unfounded and the other was not sustained, something like that. So it's, you know, it's a lot of bureaucratic hoozy-woozy without any really significant real investigation into what's going on in terms of the police treatment of the poor, the minority community here in Santa Cruz. I mean, we should not be ashamed to say that we're not perfect here. We should not be ashamed to say that there is room for real improvement. The idea is not simply to go after Butchie Baker, you know, who I still think should not be on the force, and I still have no problem saying, as far as I'm concerned, was engaged in sexual misconduct. Yes, take that one and run with it, Police Officers Association. We have testimony from, what was it, 4 women publicly, 9 women in less public circumstances, that Butcher was Butchie Baker, Sticky Fingers Baker, as I call him, was abusive in his conduct, and he's still on the police force. And I don't mind telling him that straightforward to his face. I've seen his abusive behavior against homeless people back in 1990. Now, I haven't heard much about him recently, and it's certainly fair to give a person a second chance, but it would be nice to see justice done in the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth, and tenth cases, when those have happened. And that, as far as I'm concerned, has not happened in his case. But it should happen in the police force, not simply to go after Butchie Baker, not simply to go after officers who are abusive, the man who beat John Clower in 1989 when I took him bloody into the mayor's office. And then Clower was conveniently moved out of the state because of his testimony around. Not simply the guys who went after Jason and broke his rib on the May 11th police mini-riot downtown, 1994, and the sit on the sidewalk and eat your lunch, go to jail fiasco, masterminded by Squawk Box Scott Kennedy, who will be parading around, preening himself in front of the media on Saturday, tomorrow, at this collateral damage brouhaha. But it's because we need to take responsibility for our police force, we need to praise police when they do good things, and we need to change their policies when their policies result in abuse of power. Abuse of power. Abuse of power like the Metro Police may be engaging in, too. I supported the PSI, Pacific Security Investigations. Is that the proper name for it? Anyway, it's the PSI is the group that runs the Metro Policing Force. They called me up, some members from PSI, in the fall last year and said that First Alarm, which is the group that is a rival group that trains the hosts downtown and controls boardwalk security, they have a notorious brutal reputation out there, that First Alarm was going to get the contract and that homeless people should be aware that First Alarm was going to get the contract for the Metro. And so I swung into gear and I called the transit and Kim Argula, Candlelight Kim as I call her, from Food Not Bombs, hustled on down to the Metro meetings, and we expressed our concerns, and First Alarm did not get the contract. PSI got the contract. PSI is the Metro Police. Now we hear the Metro Police, it's illegal to lie down on a bench in the Metro, even if nobody wants it, nobody needs it. I had a report from Al out in the avenues that a guy was lying down on a bench and given major hassle by security police. It's not illegal to lie on a bench. And if you're drunk, then file a charge of public drunkenness. But don't go after people who look poor, who are trying to rest. And that's my advice to people, to Metro Police officers. Now, it's a difficult job to do. You have been put in a position of combat in a class war situation, you know, unfortunately. And then I know that police officers are simply trying to bring home the bacon to keep their families together. But unfortunately, that's when you take that job, you're signing on as one of the shock troops of the ruling class, and you have to take with it the responsibility of that entails. And unfortunately, you've got to call an abusive position an abusive position. And unfortunately for cops in Santa Cruz, in many cases, that's the case today. So, police review comes up. They meet again a week from Monday, 5 o'clock, City Hall. Check it out. What else is going on? Well, an issue around police review has been the question of this complaint business. Really a small issue in terms of any real meaningful power, but an indication of how the police force doesn't want to give up an iota of its power, and they see any opportunity to humiliate the civilian police review board, they'll take it. The idea that they won't even follow the specifics of the law which the city established, which is that the police review board has a right to get a complaint when it's filed with the police department within 2 days. The police department has said, no, those complaints are now part of the personnel file, part of the private personnel file of a police officer. You don't get those complaints. Sorry. We'll give you a description of what's in them, but we won't tell you who's being complained about. We certainly won't give you any access to that officer's back file and tell you whether he's had prior complaints, and we won't tell you whether we're going to do anything about that complaint as far as any actual disciplinary consequence, the specifics about that. You don't get to know any of that information. That's all our private preserve, right? Specifically, the question of whether the cops should follow the law and forward a copy of the complaint to the Civilian Police Review Board. They're refusing to do that. Now, I brought this issue up at City Council. Oh, the City Council sort of rustled their papers. Catherine Byers said, oh, this isn't right. What do you say about this, Manager Dick Wilson? Wilson said, oh, that's not happening. It is happening. It was happening. The Police Review Board knows it's happening. Sergeant Velasquez, who covers internal affairs, knows it's happening. It's happening. They are not complying with the law. And they're not complying with the law with the collusion of the city attorney. The city attorney apparently has advised the Civilian Police Review Board that they have to first have a meet and confer session with the Police Officers Association, POA, the group that defended Butchie Baker, the group that shields police officers, guilty police officers, police officers accused publicly of sexual abuse from any kind of just treatment. Anyway, they haven't done this meet and confer session that they're supposed to do. I talked to City Manager Gay Strand. She refused to give me more information, so it may have to file a Freedom of Information Act request. That's a 3262 under state law, which I've never done, but hope to be able to do. I may, in fact, be filing such a request to get from the police department the back records of all cases of police brutality where the city has settled on claims against the city. That's something I tried to get years ago and was not too successful in getting, but hopefully now I'll be able to get some legal support and do that. And if anybody is interested in this project and making the police department accountable, do give a call to SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, at 475-2012. I'm hoping that we can all kind of merge our efforts here. We have a report from Patrick that he was harassed.